Blog Talk Radio.
Live to see it, friends, and welcome to the World Transformed. This program is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead, one that will be here sooner than you think, and one that you have an important role to play in bringing about. At the World Transformed, we want to introduce you to what may be the greatest transformation of them all, the one that begins with considering and acting on the almost limitless possibilities that lie before us, and that ends somewhere beyond the reach of the human imagination. So, when does this amazing future begin? Well, today is the day. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you?
I am super fantastic. How are you, my friend?
Man, I'm doing great. Doing real good. Got to Friday and got some interesting
Woo!
Stuff
we
to talk about.
We made it through another
about.
Week, huh?
Yeah, and a show on Elon Musk for the night. So fun stuff.
We've been geeking out a little on Fridays, and so you know we fly the freak flag a little bit on Friday, fly the fanboy flag just a little bit on Friday. We're pretty unabashed fans of Elon Musk, but we thought this week, well, we'll talk about some of the he's been talking some stuff lately, and you know maybe we're going to tell him, whoa, Elon. Settle down, you know.
Come back down to earth, man.
Yeah, just, hey, take a breath. Or maybe not. Maybe we're going to say, Elon, you're not going far enough. So we'll see. But we've got some broad, big, bold claims that Elon has been making about the future, and we're going to compare his expectations of the future with our own, and then we're going to finish up the week with the way we always do with some other geek, and I'm sure you've got some good other geek stuff for us. Let's start with Elon. What's his first bold claim about the future? What's he telling us?
People will go to Mars by 2025, and not just people, SpaceX people. That's what he's saying. We're going to be able to launch people by 2024 with arrival on Mars by 2025, and. Those are not just idle dates. Those are dates that to intercepting with Mars would be available. You know, he's looking at that particular window. These windows, come and go, Phil, but there's a window there for sending people to Mars, and he feels like they're going to be ready for it. That is awesome. I mean, that's a huge deal to put people on Mars by 2025. That is, what is that, 8 years from now? I mean,
nine years from now.
That is cool.
Launch them in 2024, so yeah, 8 years from now to do the launch. Well, here's the thing
right.
about arguing with this one, okay? Now, if you're at a, I don't know, science fiction convention, right, or just sitting at your local Starbucks, and some blowhard pops off that, people can go to Mars by 2025, yeah, take them on, okay? Challenge them on that. The problem is if Elon Musk says it, well, he's the guy building spaceships and planning to go to Mars, okay? So, when people talk big and say they're going to do a big thing, and, you know, normally you can say, yeah, you and what army, you know? It's like, yeah, Elon, you and what spaceship are going to go to Mars? Well, it's like this spaceship that I'm building.
This
right
one
here.
Out here in this warehouse that I'm building.
Yeah. It's kind of hard to argue with him on those. I mean, it's an ambitious timeline, to say the least, right? No one's ever been to Mars. And we've always talked about it being decades away, and now Elon Musk is saying not even a decade away, and I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
The reason I don't want to argue with him on this is because I really want him to be right.
Yeah.
You know,
let's
I would
do
say
this.
That
this, you know, let's do
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it sounds crazy. If anybody else says it, it sounds completely crazy. But if Elon Musk says it, I'm game. You know, let's get the ball rolling on that. Now, how many things have to fall in place for that to happen? You know, we're talking about dozens, hundreds of major things that have to fall in place. But if anybody's good at making things fall in place, it's this guy, huh? I mean.
Right. Well, this speech was a speech to the stockholders that he was making that's I mean, has been reported and re-reported and split into multiple stories, Phil. You know, you and I were looking at about five different stories that all pointed to this one speech, right?
Right, right.
And we're gonna get into some of the other things. Any one of the things he talks about in the speech, we're about to get into about five different things, and this is the first of the five. It would be, I mean, earth-breaking news, basically. But you know, it's like he mixed his "We choose to go to the moon" speech, you know, substitute Mars here, in with all these other things. And so what an amazing speech. I think this is one we'll look back at with you know, similarly as we do Kennedy's speech at Rice University.
Right. And the thing is, he can be right about just one or two of these, and it's a history-making speech, right?
Right.
He doesn't have to get them all right. I mean, what else did Kennedy talk about that day? Well, who knows, right? But he definitely said we're going to go to the moon, and that one paid off. So that's a good comparison, actually. Elon Musk, obviously not president of the United States, but as we've noted, you don't have to be president to be the person driving major developments in space. In fact,
yeah,
it's better if you're not.
These things have been handed down from nation states to private companies now. We choose to go to the Mars speech is how I'm looking at this. So that's
absolutely
pretty cool.
So not going to argue with the goal of getting to Mars. Not going to argue with the time frame. We'll point out that it's a very ambitious time frame, but
absolutely.
I think he's right. I do it, Elon. Make it happen. Okay, but how about this next one? Video games will become indistinguishable from reality. Now, no timeline on this one that I can see. Listen to this quote from Elon Musk. 40 years ago, we had Pong. I remember Pong. I had Pong. You had Pong, I bet. Now, 40 years later, we have photorealistic 3D simulations with millions of people playing simultaneously, and it's getting better every year. If you assume any rate of improvement at all, then the games will become indistinguishable from reality. What do you think?
Well, in the same speech, Phil, he goes on to say, you know, it's probable that this reality we're in right now is a simulation. And so that's some pretty deep thinking there. But
you kind of jumped to the punchline there. But he says that we might well be living in a, you know, simulation. The headline then became that we're living in a video game. And if that's true, then I will say that definitely this game is virtually indistinguishable from reality. Okay, I cannot tell the difference. I mean, occasionally things happen that are so weird, I'm like, okay, what's going on? But most of the time, day to day, I'm convinced, all right, that this is actually reality. I don't know about anybody else.
Well, here's I think that this business of being video games being indistinguishable from reality may be an enabling technology for space travel. Imagine if you put your astronauts in what amounts to the Japanese coffin hotel rooms. You know what I'm talking about? You just slip into, and it's a bed and that's it, and maybe a television set that you can fold down and watch TV right there in the bed. You know, you put your astronauts in that and kind of and put them into a simulation that they can live, you know, in some really nice simulation while they're traveling to Mars, so that you know you don't go nuts inside of a tiny little capsule. You know, the smaller you can make these capsules, the better as far as the economy. And if you're able to, like, get people, you know, slow down their metabolism and everything so that they're not needing as much food and nourishment, that would be great too. This might allow a much cheaper trip to Mars for people if you could have a sort of a indistinguishable from reality video game that they could be a part of.
Right. The whole time you're inside a space roughly the same size of when you get an MRI. Okay. That's what you're in. You're in this like coffin. You're in this tube. But what
you're on the beach. You're drinking a Mai Tai.
You're on horseback riding through the Scottish Highlands, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Right? You know, you've got all the room in the world, and you've got fresh air, and you've got, you know, wide open spaces. and plenty to do, plenty of interesting things to do, and the illusion is so compelling.
Perfect. It's perfect.
Yeah, that you
so
never
that
think,
you don't, you,
oh, I'm in this
yeah.
tube. You don't feel it, and you don't experience it. It's you know.
Or maybe you know the entire time that this is an illusion, but you don't care.
Well,
you know?
What I'm saying is, you're not experiencing that. You're experiencing this, right? You've got this other thing going on. Now, for that to work, we're talking about an interface very different from what is currently being bandied about as virtual reality, which is the visual field. And it's going to be more than a visual and auditory field, and more than you'll ever be able to achieve with a haptic suit. We're talking about video games that are working directly on the brain and straight into the nervous system. I can't disagree with this one either. I think this will happen. Whether it will occur in the form of games, or whether it will occur in the form of, you know, a kind of a new and emerging form of entertainment that we haven't even named yet.
Something beyond virtual reality, because when we say virtual reality, we're talking about visual field and maybe a haptic suit, right? This would be something beyond. This would be the next step beyond that.
Yeah, well, or many steps beyond it, but I think you do get there. I think ultimately you get to this point, and you get to this place where reality becomes, options in reality become accessible to people that never were accessible before. And at that point, you got a lot more going on than just people in spaceships, right? People are going to want this Earth side, right? People are going to want to be able to choose their subjective reality. And yeah, then we run into all the issues about, you know, spending your whole life in the holodeck and, you know, wasting away, and the real world goes away, and, all the stuff we don't have time to get into tonight. But simply to say that when that happens, it's a game changer unlike probably any technology that's come before it. Because when people can pick their own reality, their own subjective reality, they're going to do it. You know, I mean, that's going to be something that that people will do. And what it does to the real world and what it does to their real lives, that's a big question mark. Well, let's swing it back around. If he's right, and we're already living in a simulation, what's the point of doing a simulation on top of a simulation? Does it even make sense? Are we crazy if we start going that way?
Well, I think the what it allows is us to explore inner space. You know, I mean, in a way, we can interface with each other much better than regardless of our geographical location, and have an enriching life with people wherever they are. I think it's, like you say, it's a different deal.
Yeah. It could be that we live in a simulation simply because inevitably everybody builds these simulations and they forget, right? That I don't know. It's interesting to think about how that came to be. But he actually says that he thinks the chances that we're not living in a simulation are minuscule. What does he say? That, like, the chances that we're living in real reality are billions to one against. Is that right?
Yeah, I think a billion to one against that we're actually in base reality, and we've heard these arguments before from other sources that, you know, one of the first things we want to do once we get the technology to do it is to create virtual worlds,
right?
And so, you know, and we will do that over and over and over again. There's only one base reality, we presume, But in a few short years, there'll be untold numbers of virtual realities. And so the chances of us actually being in base reality, according to that line of thinking, is close to nil. And I think he's just repeating that same thought that we've heard from other sources.
Yeah,
maybe
the
Nick
difference
Bostrom.
Being, of course, there will be all those billions of realities, but we'll remember when we all lived in the shared contextual, what we thought was the base reality, right? Right now, we have no memory of there ever being another reality. That's what makes it seem like this one's special. But once there's a lot of them out there, they won't seem nearly so special. So I found nothing to argue with Elon about so far, except, you know, maybe timelines and how he phrases things and stuff like that. But how about this next one? Right?
Yeah.
We got to move quickly here so we have time for other geek.
Yep.
Completely autonomous cars will arrive in fewer than 2 years.
This one hits close to home. As you know, Phil, I'm a personal injury lawyer. My living depends on humans making mistakes behind a wheel. And
right.
He's saying that, hey, autonomous driving
over,
is. Yeah, it's. I'm going to have to find something else. I'm going to have to find an honest job. At any rate, he says here, I consider autonomous driving to be basically a solved problem. I think that's pretty cool. I like, he's saying we've already got this done. We're less than 2 years away from complete autonomy, he says. Regulators, however, will take at least another year. They'll want to see billions of miles of data. Well, they'll be able to provide that. And before you know it, we'll all be driving these autonomous vehicles, not just because it'll be safer, and it will be. I mean, I think that we're only just barely safe enough to drive, Phil. I mean, we just barely can do it as humans.
Right.
And we're just so easily distracted. Our emotions can cause us to do things that are stupid on the highway.
Well, we think of it as a safe environment.
Get drunk,
but you know,
sick.
You know we're on
whatever.
The edge all the time, right? We're always on the edge
yeah.
all the time.
Yeah.
When you're behind the wheel.
And,
I mean,
all it takes is, you know, a phone call or a text from someone that's important to you to take your mind off the road, and all of a sudden you potentially could kill somebody, including yourself. Autonomous driving takes that off the table, takes that problem away. But it's also, it gives us some free time. You know, you can sit in your car and watch a show on the way to work, or, you know, hey, listen to listen to Blog Talk Radio, listen to us, or whatever, you know, whatever you want to do. Maybe get some work done on the way to work.
Well, what
whatever.
I was thinking, Stephen, is you will be able to work on the coursework required for your new career as your
that's
self-driving
exactly right.
car chases the self-driving ambulance, right?
Exactly.
Just kidding.
Oh, man,
you
got to be good there.
I'm just kidding. But it's true. I mean, it's going to make it safer, and we're going to find new things to do during this travel time. I completely agree with the timeline here, because as he says, it's pretty much a solved problem anyway. We'll be buying cars that have that capability, probably mostly latent, mostly you can't use it all, but it'll be there, right? They're going to start building it into the cars because we'll be able to use more and more of it. And I think we'll incrementally get to self-driving cars through more and more automation becoming more and more acceptable over
a very short
period of time.
Yeah, we'll first see it as something, as an option that we can turn on when we're on the interstate and driving like that, and we'll love that so much that we'll demand for more. And of course, you know, within a few short years, it'll be, you know, push button. It'll be like your cell phone with certain numbers already pre-programmed in. You'll have certain destinations pre-programmed in. You know, I want to go to work. I want to go home. I want to, you know. Whatever, and your car will do it, and we'll even check with local traffic reports and find, okay, well, today we're not going to take this route because it's backed up because of an accident or whatever. We're going to someone not using an autonomous car probably. We're going to go this way, and amazing.
And you think about technology we're already using, where suddenly you have to stop and pick something up on your way to T-ball, where you have to get some sporting goods of some kind, and suddenly you're picking up the phone and saying, hey, where's the nearest sporting goods store, and you're getting directions and you're feeding it. You know, now you just say to the car, right, take me to a sporting goods store, right, the closest one.
Yeah.
And, you know, no, one that has this, right? And, you know, the whole thing will be seamless. The entire experience. Or, you know, how you just say,
and take me to the sporting goods store that has this T-ball tee. And while you're at it, go ahead and check me out. I'll grab it at the front. It'll already be paid for.
Oh, now you're talking. Yeah, exactly.
And there you are. So, I mean, that's the way I see these things going. So,
fantastic. Okay, how about this? An Apple Car is coming in 2020. Now we're almost kind of falling off. It's like, if we're going to have a completely self-driving car in 2 years, and we're going to be in Mars in 2025, an Apple Car in 2020 doesn't sound like that big of a deal to me. Why is this one a big deal, do you think?
Well, he says 2020. I think in part he's throwing a little cold water, I think, on a competitor. you know, he's already in this field with Tesla. He's
right.
Saying it's going to be 2020 rather than 2019, which is what was reported in the Wall Street Journal. And he says Apple should have been doing this years ago, which may very
right.
well be true. Hey, you know, it's sort of like what company said welcome to the game? We've already been doing this for years. They had an ad like that. We honestly welcome so and so to the field. And of course, it was a way
before
to
destroyed them. Yeah,
exactly. We're gonna pat you whippersnappers on the head a little bit.
In fact, Steve Jobs welcomed IBM to the PC space. Right. That's right.
That's exactly what that was.
Yeah.
And it's a way of patting them on the head a little bit. And, you know, we're mature enough, and we're not worried about you, little guy. I think there's a little bit of that in this. But it's interesting. I think that in the future our car companies are going to be from companies that we've traditionally thought of as other things. You know, Tesla was a brilliant upstart kind of venture, but I think it's kind of pointing the way for Apple to do what Tesla has done, and I think. You know, we may have an Apple car by 2020, but it might have been 2030 had it not been for Tesla and their success.
Right.
So,
absolutely. Well, we'll
pave the way
a
little bit.
Yeah, I'll tell you one thing: if Tesla and Apple follow the same trajectory that Apple and IBM did on the PCs for the car, what'll happen is Apple's going to cause Tesla a lot of hurt, but Tesla will win in the end. So. We'll see what happens. It'll be really interesting to watch that all unfold. But I'm holding out for the Windows car. I don't know about you.
It'll be a Zune. They call it the Zune.
The Zune. It'll have a Zune player built right in. That's what's so awesome. And little Clippy, the paperclip, he'll give you the tip of the day every time you get behind the wheel. That's what I'm looking forward to.
I can't wait.
Okay, we got one more. We're already a cyborg. So this is great. Elon Musk has become kind of a buzzkill on the subject of AI. And now he says, okay, but we got to think about the fact that we are becoming one with the technology. And he says he makes a statement very near and dear to my heart here. He says, you have basically superpowers with your computer and your phone and the applications that are here. Absolutely. You have more power than the President of the United States had 20 years ago. So he's pointing out that...
I think he listens to our program, Phil. I mean, haven't
well,
we
should,
actually
if he said doesn't.
Those
Elon,
words?
If you're listening, thanks for listening. And as you can see, we mostly agree with you. But if you're not listening, and your friends are, somebody tell Elon he really needs to tune in.
Yeah.
But I like where he's going, and I think he's right. He's finally caught the offsetting part of this. Stephen, the thing you talk about all the time, which is the fact that, yeah, but the technology is a big threat, but also we're rapidly incorporating the technology into who we are and into what we can do. And as long as we stay on that path, we've got a good shot at not being destroyed by the technology. At least that's the way
right.
That's the way I understand what he's saying. Does that resonate
yeah.
with you?
Yeah. There's really no good defense against being destroyed by the technology except develop the defenses with the same technology. We got to keep our foot on the gas. That's the only thing that is our best defense here. If you're worried about technology, then you should push for more technology.
We need more technology, and we got to get better at it. We got to
that's
own
right.
it and incorporate it, not run away from it.
That's right, because if you run away from it, it'll be developed someplace else and
it's
used
just like
only.
A snarling dog. You know, you run away from it. What's it going to do, right?
That's right.
We got
to
stand
right.
there and take.
You need to have your own. Yeah, you need to have your own dog right next to you that'll defend you from the snarling. Someone else's snarling dog, right? So
even if,
yeah,
yeah, even if it's scary. Okay, so we said we were going to agree or argue with Elon Musk, and I guess the bottom line is whether it's going to Mars, whether it's video games becoming indistinguishable from reality, autonomous cars, the Apple car. Or the fact that we're already cyborgs and we need to own it so that we can prevent the robot apocalypse, I guess we pretty much agree with Elon Musk, don't we?
I really don't find much many points of disagreement. And this is I think it's a remarkable speech by the head of several companies, right, because of how, future-oriented it is. this is not the sort of speech you would expect from, you know, a CEO 10 years ago, right, Phil? Or 5 years ago, even.
That's right.
They'd be talking about firing that CEO and bringing somebody else in, because we obviously are dealing with a madman.
Yeah, put him on sabbatical anyway, right? He needs a rest.
Yeah, right. He needs to get some rest so he can get back down to earth and
he meant
that to be
his April 1st speech, and we don't know what happened, but anyway.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Somebody loaded up some sort of crazy speech on his teleprompter. No, but this is...
We're going to actually utilize synergy and improve market share. That's what he really means.
Exactly. Something boring like that, where you're saying nothing when you say something. But no, this is... I find reason to agree with him on every point here.
Absolutely. All right. Well, Stephen, we got just a few minutes, and I got nothing. So, other geek us. What do you got for us?
Other geek. Okay, well... we talked last week about my favorite two-person game, which is Seven Wonders Duel. Let me tell you about another two-person game that I and my son Thomas like quite a bit. Onitama is the name of this game. It is a chess-lite game. It's played on a 5x5 grid. You know, chess and checkers and are played on 8x8 a grid, but this is 5x5. And so instead of having in pieces with assigned moves, like a bishop moves just diagonally, the knight moves in kind of an L shape, and et cetera, instead of having your pieces always assigned a specific type of movement, the movements available to your pieces vary based on are dictated by cards that you have.
Oh, okay.
So I have two cards in front of me, Phil. I have a card on deck that's coming to me next turn, and I see what that move is. And you've got two cards in front of you, and I see what your moves are. And so I say, ooh, I've got to think about what move Phil is going to make with his two cards that he has available to him. And I've also got to think about the two moves that I have available and what's the best move for me. But here's the other thing. When I use one of my two moves, I put that card – I pass that card to the middle, and it's on deck for you. So, the thing is – you literally can't lose without giving your opponent the weapon to kill you with.
Wow.
That is how the Onitama works. So the game only uses five cards, two for each player, plus the one that's on deck, right? And there's 16 movement cards that come with the game. So each game is quite different. I mean, there's different movements available. And here's the thing, my family mostly loves games that have a strong theme. You know, you're playing as pirates and you're out on the open water and you're delivering goods and are trying to deliver goods and then you have the other players playing as a pirate or whatever to get your goods. And we love games like that. And there's another game called Pandemic. You're basically playing as members of the CDC fighting disease.
Right.
And of course, Star Wars games and things like that. We love stuff like that. This game is basically themeless, okay? It's an abstract, almost purely. Vaguely, there's two martial arts schools fighting each other. You got a master token in the middle and the home base where he starts that's basically your school. And if you capture the other person's school, that's one way of winning. And the card names are named for martial art fighting styles. You know, this move is the Mantis. Okay, and this other move that I've got in front of me is the monkey, et cetera. But it's purely abstract, though. But our family loves it, especially my son Thomas and I. We play it all the time. It took us about 5 minutes to get the rules down. I mean, no learning curve hardly at all. It takes about 10 minutes to play a game, and invariably we finish a game. You want to play again? Yeah, let's play again.
Chess, in that chess is based on warfare, but it's an extremely abstract version of that.
Extremely abstract. I mean, you got a king and a queen, but I mean, you could call them anything you wanted to, you know. And that's how Onitama is. And the depth to it is amazing. As you know, chess is depth. People spend a lifetime learning it. It's not quite. Maybe it doesn't quite have the depth of chess that way. But you get a lot of the, you have to think, okay, what are they going to do with the card I'm handing them? You know, and I see the cards that are in front of me. This is all open information. You're not hiding your cards at all. They're all in front of you. You see what their cards are. You see what your card is, and you see the card you're about to pass them because that's the move you're making. And you might think to yourself, man, this move is great, and I need to use it. But if I give it to Phil, man, he's going to kill me with it next turn. So and I'm going to use this move that's kind of a weak move for me, but it's also a weak move for him. And so you got to think about that in this game. And so we love it and highly recommend. It's a very it's an inexpensive game. I think it's a little above $20 and highly replayable because of the multiple cards that are available, making each game different. Onitama.
Sounds like fun. All right.
Yep.
Well, I'm going to check that one out. How old do you have to be to play it?
I think it's recommended for, 10 and up.
Oh, okay.
I think it's easier to teach to a young person than chess. There are smart kids that are five playing chess. So I think you could teach it to your twins might be a bit young, but get it and put it in front of them and see what they think.
Definitely.
You don't have to read to do it. I mean, the cards are you can look at the card and see what the move is that it provides.
Right. Okay. So I'm gonna pick this one up. It sounds really interesting, really intriguing. And if I get anywhere with it, I'll report back on a future Other Geek. But
that's
gonna do it for tonight. I think that's I didn't have another geek contribution. I've been doing TV shows, but I don't have one this week. So I'll try to come back with at least one good Other Geek item next week, Stephen. And look forward to hearing what's next with you and games you're playing or other geeky things that you're coming up with. Hey, we're going to be back next week with three brand new shows. Great talking with you, Stephen, as always, all this week. And look forward to being with you all again next Monday. And until next time, live to see it.